As much as I like to fight everyone, I'm having a pretty good time here. Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad?
Hey, Louisa.
Hi, Jake. How's it going?
Good. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I know it's your favorite holiday and that you're getting smashed on green Guinness right now.
I'm sad that SantaCon's not. No, that's on Christmas, right?
Yeah.
Or SantaCon. Okay. I literally thought SantaCon was on St. Patrick's Day because it's like the same shit.
Same spirit for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Same guys.
Yeah. I am celebrating St. Patrick's Day because I got my second dose of the vaccine from a little man in a green outfit.
Ooh, you got pinched.
Yeah, I got pinched for St. Patrick's Day. So now I can get out there and socialize with my mask on. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm excited because it just does feel okay. Weirdly. Okay. This is probably a segue. I mean, I haven't even asked you how you're doing, but we're just going to fucking jump right in.
It doesn't matter.
You can tell me it doesn't matter. It does matter. No, wait. How are you doing, Jake? What's going on?
Oh, no, it really doesn't matter. I'm fucking tired. I have a sleep disorder, and I'm dealing with a doctor trying to fix it, but I woke up like 2 hours ago after recording my other show and then being up all night. I'm all fucked up and out of whack. So I'm just chilling. I'm having kind of a chill day.
Oh, yeah, that's my plan for tomorrow since I might have side effects or whatever.
It sounds kind of fun getting the second shot because you're like, oh, you're just going to make me hungover. Like, I know how to deal with this.
That's why I'm like, I'm going to have some wine because I'm probably going to feel like shit tomorrow anyway.
Yeah.
So, fuck it. Let's do it. What I was going to say was that it's a really fucking weird day, right? Of like highs and lows, I guess, right? In the sense of, I feel good about getting the vaccine, and not just me, but, for me, my tiny family, that is just my mom and my brother, I was very worried about because we're all uninsured and, you know, my mom and my brother have complications more serious than being a fatty like me. I have this like huge sense of relief of like, I know nothing is fixed yet, or, you know, this doesn't solve all the problems, but it feels like the light at the end of the tunnel, right? Like we're getting there. There's all this positive news about, I don't know if you saw that, like, I believe the first woman to give birth to a baby with COVID antibodies happened.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's a woman, she's a health worker. I think she got the vaccine while she was pregnant in her last trimester. And her baby was born with COVID antibodies. So that's a very good positive sign. There's the fact that, like, the Pfizer vaccine, at least, which is the one that I got, so I'm happy about this, there's studies now showing that it has something like high 90% success in, like, not transmitting asymptomatic COVID, which is like the big deal, right? Because if you were vaccinated, there was no confirmation yet that you wouldn't get other people sick still, that you wouldn't still carry the virus and pass it on.
Yeah.
And now there is, at least with Pfizer, which honestly means it's probably likely that the other ones also do, which is great because that means the more people that get vaccinated, the less people are passing around bad COVID, right? So there's like all these things, and then there's also terrible things happening in the world, right? And the shootings happened in Atlanta, or were done by this dude that went and like shot a bunch of people, in mostly Asian women, in massage parlors, right?
Yeah.
And so then today I'm like feeling all good about this vaccine, and then I go on social media and I see that, you know, there's other comics being like, they're also happy they got the vaccine, or not even posting about the vaccine. Actually, no, it was specifically a comic who has been touring this whole year, Jake.
Oh, I saw this, I think.
Yeah, and he like posted something today being like, oh, it's so great. It feels like we're almost at the light at the end of the tunnel and things are about to get back to normal. That's going to be so wonderful. And it's like,
All those people are trying to cover their ass right now by like rewriting history.
What did you do that was not normal before? You were still doing all the normal shit. You were part of the reason there was extent. And I'm honestly like, it's not even like I
just experienced the Titanic, and this person is like on the fucking life raft in front of everyone, and they were like, "Wow, we made it through this together." It's like, no, everyone knows what you did now. You know,
you stepped on the children and the women to get on the life raft, and then you're like, "Thank God we all made it, right?" And it's like. Okay, you know, I'm not even mad about that. I mean, whatever. You know how I am, Jake. I have to, like, I will go mad if I don't accept that there's things that individuals can't fully control and can't fully be blamed for, et cetera, et cetera. But thinking about this shooting, these shootings in Atlanta, and the fact that they are certainly not the first anti-Asian violence in America by a long shot, right? But it had me, you know, this year during COVID, obviously, I guess, there were conservative comedians, and even those comedians who wouldn't call themselves conservatives, but obviously pandered to that audience. I'm not going to even sugarcoat that, I guess, but they engaged in this like kung flu shit, you know, and they made the video about everybody's got the kung fu flu.
I was just thinking about that the other day because it's so fucking unfunny.
Yeah, dude.
Especially like revisit like 6 months later or whatever.
Yeah, and even before that, Shane with the Asian accent thing on his podcast, and you know, and when these things come up, there's like always this conversation of like, oh, I feel like the combo in comedy is like, oh, well, Asians like the thing that's still okay to make fun of. Right. And then the other side of it is like, oh, no, it's not okay to make fun of it. Unless it's like funny. Like, I don't know. There's like this line that's like okay with it. And they feel like they're being transgressive by being specifically anti-Asian, let's say, right?
Yeah.
And that when they make jokes, that these jokes have no impact on anything, that they don't contribute and like at like become part of this entire intersection of politics, misogyny, white supremacy, classism, fucking puritanical like self-hatred because of sex and hate of sex workers. All these layers of things that the media, including art and jokes, fucking feeds. Because if you're adding to this, then you're adding to it. There's no other way that I can put it. And I am just kind of experiencing this like anger, I guess, that is on a very stupid thing, right? Because it's like, whatever, you shouldn't, you know, comedians love to say shit like, we shouldn't be holding comedians to higher standards than politicians or whatever, right? And it's like, no, it doesn't, you know what? It doesn't actually have to be one or the other. It could absolutely be both. And if I admire you all so much because of the power of your word, you cannot, like, I can't pretend that your word doesn't have power. You know, like,
yeah,
you can't want it both ways. So, I mean, I don't know. As I clarify my thoughts, tell me what you think of it.
Dude, I have so many fucking thoughts about this because, I mean, you're right, I think, to point out that people are definitely deflecting and they're not being consistent, which means something is wrong, right? Someone's lying about something, right? But this is kind of a complicated issue because, like, okay, so it's St. Patrick's Day, for example, right? We were just talking about this on my other show. You know, Irish people used to not be white, and there's a process of being invited into what the American, specifically white thing is, and what it became, and what it came to mean all over the world. Like, we were talking to this Irish guy, and he was like, yeah, it's like crazy that you guys, we were talking to this Irish comedian, and he was like, as an Irish person, it's weird from our point of view that you guys like have like Latin people and you don't consider them white and stuff like that. Like, all these things are very skewed, right?
Yeah.
And so what's funny about the Irish is that we can make fun of Irish stereotypes and stuff, and it's very vanilla. Like, no one really gets mad because the goal is to become so comfortable and so protected in society that you can do that, and that it doesn't cause, there's no Irish mass shooting, right, that's happened recently, right? No one gives a shit, because it's part of whiteness. So the goal, I guess, is kind of everyone become white or something like that. But like with Asians, like, it's weird because they're still considered minorities, but they're considered this model minority thing. And so I think that a lot of times something different is happening, like when you have the model minority thing cast onto you, where I don't know how to really explain this, but there's just, I have a friend who's Korean, and he's cool, but he's like very just kind of.
He's cool, but.
Well, he's just he's pissed off about stuff a lot, and like I do too. Like we hang out, we just yell about shit or whatever. But he gets pissed off about white people being racist a lot, and I feel bad for him because he lived in Williamsburg, right? And so when I first moved to New York, I would always go hang out with him. I'd be like, "Let's go to the Knitting Factory. Let's go to this fucking show down the street." And he's the friend who comes to comedy shows who's not a comedy person who. You feel bad for it because they get burned like 3 times. You're like, that person's never going to watch comedy again, right? But I swear to God, every single show I took him to, I don't know how it happened specifically like this, but I have a theory. Every single show I took him to...
Oh, you told me this. Somebody did Asian racist stuff?
Specifically, it would be a black guy comic who would do an offensive Asian joke. And it was weird because my friend was the only guy in the room who would be like, what the fuck? It flew past everyone else's radar, right? Because, and I think what's going on here with comedians is that they don't get in trouble for doing Asian jokes as much as they get in trouble for doing other jokes. And especially if you're like black, for example, right? It doesn't scan as quickly as like a white person doing it as impressive or whatever. They're equating the fact that you can get away with it with like the fact that it's okay because they're putting the capitalism into it and going like, well, the rules are what sells, you know, that means it's what's good or bad. That's what everyone fucking does all the time. Right.
Yeah.
If you have a fucking Nazi podcast, you're like, no, it's good because people buy it. That means it's good. Right. It's not based on just what the fuck it is, you know, morally or whatever. Yeah. So I don't know.
Okay, but see, so I think I can see where the model minority thing comes in the fact that I think, I hope none of this gets me in trouble. This is also the problem of like, I don't, it's in the anthropologist problem, honestly, Jacob, just like, I don't want to speak for other people, but then also it feels like using people to be like, hi, would you like to come on just to talk about your particular like identity and represent your entire group? And I know like comics for a fact will say like, don't just have me on for Black History Month, you know, or like whatever. And it's like, no, you're right. But then also, should I speak on this when I'm not in group? I don't know. So here goes. I think the model minority thing might be playing into this in the sense of like, nobody expects, even if there were an Asian person in the audience to get upset, nobody expects that they would be vocal and aggressive and demand respect, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's where it's safer because of the narratives around the Black culture in America, where they frame them as like violent fucking super predators or whatever, right? Whatever they were, does that Clinton call them?
That was Hillary Clinton, yeah.
Yeah. Then there is this like subconscious expectation in white people's minds that there's more danger to saying things about Black people than there is about Asian people. But I don't even think that's a model minority thing. I think that's another symptom, the same way the model minority is a symptom of just the history of America.
Yeah, I think you're right. Actually, that's what it is.
Which is that, you know, the Asian Exclusion Act, right? There was like, if you like look at immigration history, there was first a law on the books that was specifically about Asian women, I want to say, was one of the first laws on the books in America that limited immigration, okay? And then they made that Asian Exclusion Act of 1885, I think. And that was like the first major nationwide full on just one law about an ethnic group to keep them out, right? And because of that, because I think we're like a nation founded on we only take people in or force people in, as a matter of fact, if it's going to be quote unquote useful to our society, and then the rest of the time we're going to act in this hateful and fearful of foreigners way and actually make it the legal law of the land, permeates everything we do, you know what I mean? And then we talked about laundry work and the fact that even Asians who were allowed to move to the U.S. at some point were relegated to out of view work, right? Whether it was laundry work or railroad work or things that were just like, you'll be out of view from public white people, basically. It made it so that they just got folded away as like, this is how we treat them. This is how we talk about them. Even Chinatowns, I don't remember the photographer, but there's a photographer who's a white photographer, so it's kind of ironic, but it's a good project. I think it's a German guy who went around photographing all the Chinatowns in the world that are not in China. And the point of the exhibit was to show how Chinatowns were like encapsulated and othered, and the reason that they popped up is not only because of this model minority wanting to stay segregated and together, it was also because they were literally segregated into this is where you can work and this is where you can live and this is where your food will be served, you know? So it's always been this this really messed up thing where Asians are this like exotic object. And then at the same time can be vilified at the turn of a hat whenever they want. And it's especially disgusting with this recent thing, which I also will relate to comedy, but the recent thing with this fucking shooter being like, oh, it's not race motivated. It's about sex workers. It's because they make me horny and I don't want to fucking be tempted or whatever the fuck.
Wow, cool.
So you, yeah, it's so you objectifying an entire ethnicity of women, even if you don't fucking say that it's about their fucking race. You bypassed Atlanta strip clubs. You bypassed fucking regular massage parlors, or by regular I mean white. Sorry, that's rude. But you know what I mean, like non-Asian themed fucking massage parlors. So what are you talking about? It's not. It can't be separated. The fact that you don't see these people as human. You don't see Asian women in particular as human. And I think that that is like not that far away from making the kinds of jokes where you don't see Asian people as human.
Yeah. Well, okay. So to bring it back to comedy for a second, another thing I wanted to bring up in regards to this thing I'm talking about where like no one calls it out. It's like a negative space problem. It's like, no, there's not a positive reason for this. There's just nothing happens. So people think it's okay because people define what is okay based on whether they are reprimanded for shit. You know, like liberals too, like not just like edgelord people or whatever, but like fucking hardcore, like Twitter resistance libs. Every fucking one of these people every once in a while has an old tweet that gets dug up and they fucking have to, you know, self-flagellate over it. And it's always an Asian joke. It's really weird. That Randy Rainbow guy, that really cringy, like, YouTube video guy, he had a meltdown and locked his account because he has some old fucking joke from when he was, you know, probably 23 or something, where he tried to make an edgy joke about this thing that was you could get away with back then. And it's proof that you can get away with it because he did. And no one said anything until now when they went back and sort of looked for it. And like, you know, Megan Amram, I mean, the thing that she got in trouble for was the same thing. And like, I think that's really interesting because it lives in this certain space where like every time someone gets in trouble for old tweets, I think those of us in like comedy with enough of a 3D view on this thing can see on some level, like this person didn't mean for this to happen. Like this is a situation where people are kind of taking advantage of the fact that Twitter is a thing where you say every thought you've ever had and like, let's get this person in trouble or whatever. Right.
Same with what you were saying about black comics doing Asian jokes. I think, you know, honestly, I think there is probably anti-Asian bias within black communities that needs to be addressed, especially maybe in different diasporas, but it is also partially wanting to fit in or feeling like it's acceptable to make these jokes
right.
in a white room. Yeah.
So I was thinking about this the other day because like our friend Lewis fucking tweeted this thing about like the $15 minimum wage. And I was just looking at this and I was like, this guy.
I was about to be like, who's our friend Lewis? You know. sorry.
So, yeah, the fucking guy, the snake. So he he tweeted this thing about the $15 minimum wage, and I was looking at it, and I was just like, this is so funny, because these fucking people always say, like, I'm not political, I just do jokes, right? And then it's like every 10th thought they have is like, people shouldn't get paid a minimum wage. It's like, well, duh, like everything's, you were clearly political, you're just deflecting, right? And I was like, why is this person deflecting? So, you know, I think it's kind of interesting is that the people that always say, I'm not political, I'm just doing jokes, are saying that to cover for the fact that they're doing a type of joke that would get called out, I guess, and get them in trouble or something. But like, it is inherently political. Here's the thing though. Yeah. I don't think it's bad to do this. I think it's cool. Like, I like transgressive jokes, but like something we've talked about on the show a lot is that in a lot of ways, a joke, especially this type of joke, is essentially just stepping a line. Like, it's pushing a line, and yeah, it's saying a thing you're not supposed to say. And that, the reason it's political is because the line is defined by society. Right. And it's subjective to every situation you're in. So like, I was telling you this story off mic. I'll tell it on the show. I think it's really funny. When I was in high school, I sat in the first period class I had in fucking algebra, me and my friend Brian, who was black. We were the two worst kids in this fucking algebra class, and we fucked off all day, and we didn't do a lot of homework, and we ended up fucking up this class real bad because we would get to work and we just joke around with each other. But we'd say the N-word to each other a lot. And the reason I think it was so fucking funny is because he was black and I was not. And he was like, I was like, I'm not supposed to be saying this. He's like, I'm not supposed to be letting you say this. So we'd just be dying laughing because it was, you know, the point was transgression, right? But it was safe within certain lines. And so when comedians make jokes, like, we know that feeling, which is within a certain situation where everyone is like consenting and everyone is okay with it, demonstrating that the line is okay to cross technically, but it, you know, but you shouldn't do it all the time, is like actually very, like, it's like a bond you form with other people. Like, you trust someone enough to violate society's laws together for a moment and then go back to normal. But what these comedians are doing is conflating like that feeling with like, oh, I should be able to do this all the time with anyone I want, because an audience is a thing where it's not just your friend Brian. It's like anyone in the fucking world could be in it. And they're taking that and going, well, you know, if I can't do that literally all the time, then fuck you, you're oppressing me or whatever, right? And it's a really complicated question. And I like edgy comedy because I'm like, no, this is like a good question. Like, this thing is so precious because you can only do it certain times and where it actually works. And like, you're a bad comic if you don't read the room and figure out whether you can push someone's buttons or whatever, you know?
Dude, but yeah, exactly. But that's why I don't think like what you're comparing is the same, because what you're talking about is like what people, you know, and I also think it's like bad for comedians in particular to think that private sphere comedy and public sphere comedy are the same thing.
No, that's what I'm saying. Even, that's what sucks about being a comedian.
I don't mean like saying the same words. I mean like to think that they even function the same way, right? Like what makes things funny. What makes something funny between you and your friend totally different from what makes something funny in a room full of strangers, right?
I know, that's what I'm saying.
No, hold on, but it's not the context thing. No, I mean what I'm trying to get at is hack versus not. Yeah. Okay. So in your friend group, you can lose your shit at some hack shit, right? Like, you could fucking, it's hilarious that you keep doing this joke for years. It's fucking outdated and we think it's hilarious. It's fucking corny or it's racially inappropriate, whatever it is. And we think it's so funny because of the dynamics of this friendship or this group, right? But then on stage, even if you were in a room full of all white supremacists who find this joke about black people, let's say, funny, 99% of the time, Jake, they are hacky jokes. It is not funny. You are standing on a stage saying some shit that some hacky stand-up in 1975 also said.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's fucking not acceptable as art, as performance art, as fucking you get paid for this or you want to or you think that this is your calling. You are a hack. You know, I'm like,
yeah, no, it's bad. The only thing that's funny about it is that you're crossing the line. But that joke, like that, the humor in that crossing the line is in sharing it with a group of people. And the thing is, if that group of people, if it includes, like, the problem is, like, when like hacks do that,
yeah,
the group of people that they're sharing that experience with are like the other comics that they're associating with. and the worst of their fans who just want to cross that line. Like, it's not really creative in any way.
Exactly. And so that's what I mean. It's not good comedy. Like, you can't say you are objectively doing good comedy.
Yeah.
It's not about subjective taste of the content of your joke. It's that it is objectively bad, unoriginal comedy. You know, like, So the reason I bring that up is because it is hypocritical of any comic to stand on the side of, I should be allowed to joke about whatever I want because it's an argument supposedly on the basis of defending your craft, but then you're going to get on stage and be the biggest fucking hack on earth. You don't care about craft. Stop acting like you care about craft and like you need these artistic freedoms or whatever, because you're not doing shit with your artistic freedoms. You are just adding to oppressive language and contributing to affirmation bias and reinforcing terrible tropes in comedy and in people's heads. And to me, this is related to Patrice.
Of course.
Very much. So, I mean, I don't know. It's definitely not solvable. It's not something like... I mean, you got to what I think is what's bothering me. Like, I know I haven't formulated any of this very well, but it just happened, I guess, or for the latest time.
Well, it's an organic podcast, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But talking out. What you were saying about the depoliticization thing, right? Because to me, what's offensive is not really their jokes, you know? What's offensive is this point of view, this agenda, I guess, like, I don't know, that they're pushing out of, like, the idea that the people who are bringing politics into comedy are the people who are offended by a joke, and not that they are the ones bringing politics.
It's the most inherently political type of joke in the world. A non-political joke is like a Julio Torres joke about a turtle or something.
Exactly. And that by the very act of pretending political ignorance or political inefficacy, you are enacting white supremacy.
Yeah, because that's what white supremacy does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So It is extremely frustrating to me whenever I see a comic that I really like, especially if a comic of color, because it happens, Jake, where they are like defending this fucking, sensitive people that are ruining comedy. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, you're like an Irish person in the fucking 1800s. You're buying into white supremacy. Like, you're going, you know, hey, I'm protected if I have this point of view on things and see things this way. I was thinking about this also because, like... You know, I hate that I always fucking bring this shit up on the show and like talk about my own specific circle, but I'm kind of fascinated with it because there's this thing that all these people argue about in like the quote unquote dirtbag left or whatever, where they'll say like, you know, like the whole point of that subculture was to take left politics, but then take away the cringy, like cultural, social aspect of it, where it's a person who's just being unreasonable and overly woke and annoying and turning everyone off, right? But I was thinking about this. I thought about this because I've been on a journey with this shit. Where as a comic, a few years ago, I was really into this concept because, like, there are cringy liberal people. They're fucking horrible, you know? And I did think on some level at some point in my life, oh, yeah, wokeness is this terrible thing. And now as an older comic, I'm looking at literally every 25-year-old guy I've ever met who's coming to the same conclusion. I'm like, wow, this isn't that original of a point. It's a thing that every fucking guy comes to where they think this is a real thing. And also, I think that it's really inherently steeped in whiteness because the point of, like, trying to make this point where you're like, you know, wokeness is bad, SJWs are bad or whatever is... It's very similar to like the MAGA stuff where it's like the world was better before this new idea came up. It's not a very materialist idea. It's a very idealistic idea. It's like scapegoating a group of people for having introduced an idea that seems new to you, but it's not new. It's just that you're hearing it for the first time, but you're like saying like, oh, what if we just round up all these fucking people, get rid of it? You know, I mean, that's like not really cool to think about. Right. Or to argue. But like something I've noticed is that the people of color that are involved in this online left shit are often not like, they're not down with this. And I'm like, yeah, dude, what the fuck? It's really just white people that are kind of behind this concept that like you know, oh, anyone who is attacking me on the basis of like specifically a racial issue is being insincere and I just don't believe them or whatever. And that comes from what racism I think actually is, which is not a thing in your DNA. It's not a fucking evil thing. It's not entirely, it's institutional, but the main thing is it is the white experience is an experience of privilege. And so you have all sorts of shit that you do. You have actions that have consequences and effects on other people. And whiteness is the privilege to not think about the effects that they have on other people. And so when someone reminds you of those effects, you go, oh, this is like SJWs. They're just trying to cancel me to get ahead of themselves or whatever. But everyone else who doesn't fit directly into the paradigm of whiteness is like screaming at you like, no, listen, I'm trying to tell you every day of my life, I'm affected by this fucking thing that you're saying doesn't exist. And you're saying anyone who brings it up is just doing it for like attention or whatever. So it's like blindness. It's like privilege. And the more I think about it, I'm like, this is fucking fratty, like white guy shit. These people might as well be playing golf together or whatever, essentially. And it's crazy because, you know, yeah, with like comedians, it often, you know, they tokenize and include like people of color in this, but what you can be a Puerto Rican guy and doing white shit. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like serving white people. And that's essentially what's going on here. It's serving whiteness as a whole.
Yeah. As an example, actually, on the Irish side, Liam, shit, what's his last name? Fuck. He's cool. He's like a journalist. He's Irish, obviously. I want to say he's a historian. Maybe. And no, not that one. And he posts stuff about Irish history quite often. And today he posted something about, it's like a good thread that is meant, it's addressed to other Irish people. And it's about the role that Irish Americans had in drafting and creating the Asian Exclusion Act. And how oppressing or ousting Asians, or, you know, legalizing or making them illegal and that kind of thing was part of the way in which Irish Americans rose to power and to, quote, equality.
Yeah. Like, did they talk about that in this book by the guy's name is Ignatieff? It's called How the Irish Became White. Mm-hmm. He sort of describes this there's two wolves inside of you kind of thing at one point, where he's describing like white Irish people and black people like being laborers together in Philadelphia, and how in the beginning like they fucking fucked and they bred and had all these, you know, mixed kids and stuff, and they lived in the same ghettos and shit and they went to the same prisons. And then at one point there's like it's probably complicated because there's like two classes of Irish people, and like one of them is like the bourgeois in Ireland, the Scots Irish, who are like actually Protestant as opposed to like the working class Catholic. Mm-hmm. So like that probably has a lot to do with it. But it's just describing this, whereas like, you know, there could have been a cross ethnic, cross racial coalition between all of these people, but Irish people bought in. And they threw black people under the bus, essentially. And like in this time in history when whiteness as a concept that we have was really even being constructed, you know?
Yep. Yeah, they also threw Asians under the bus.
Because at the time there was this is a detail I was trying to remember. Nationalization for white people was like a law that had been passed. But the question in the air was, are Irish people white? And they literally would, I mean, they like, there was a big argument over this because they literally were calling people, like in the book, it talks about how like Irish people were sometimes referred to as inside out N-words because they were so associated with black people. And black people, by the way, this is his incredibly racist old timey term, but in the Philadelphia at the time, they were called smoked Irish, which is fucked up, but pretty funny, by the way.
I forgot that,
just because it's old timey and weird.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to jump into Patrice or where to jump into Patrice or if we should right now, but I'm gonna just make one connection here because I don't know if this is fucking controversial, but I kind of think that the Patrice situation, Patrice as an idea and as a fucking like comic on a pedestal, you know, since he's dead now and stuff. It's kind of a result of a reverse of everything they were talking about right now. And what I mean by that is, like, do you remember in the documentary there was a part where they were talking about him coming up in Boston?
Yeah. The one, this is very on brand. His name's Patrice and he's from Boston.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was funny because, well, I will say that the documentary also noted that Patrice claimed New York, not Boston. Thank you so much. Thank
yeah.
you to us. Anyway, he in the part where they were talking about like starting when he started in Boston, it was weird because I don't think they meant to paint it this way, but it really came off this way, which was, you know, the story you had heard a lot, I had heard, most of us had heard, I think, is about how Patrice started because one day he just like went to a show and he started heckling somebody. And then he was funnier than the guy on stage. So he got up on stage and he killed, and that he's been killing ever since. That's the story that I had heard.
Right.
And then the documentary fleshes that out a little bit more, right? Which is funny to hear like the hero version, right? The like he was always perfect version. To then hearing this other one where after he heckled the guy, which don't heckle people. That's not a cool story of how to start.
Yeah, and, no, it's actually not.
Yeah, it's not cool at all. And he heckled somebody. And then that comic, actually from the comic telling the story who was on the stage, said what actually happened was he then said, like, man, if you want, why don't you try this? And then talked to him afterwards and gave him some ideas of where to go get up. Right.
Right.
So then Patrice went.
But then the legend became, fuck that guy. Patrice is cooler than him.
Exactly. Exactly. And meanwhile, this guy actually had the fucking kindness to like talk to a piece of shit heckler and be like, yeah, man, here's where you could get up. You know, like try starting over here. Which he really didn't have to do, but he did. So then Patrice goes and he starts doing shows around Boston and shit. And like, if you hear the way that these people on the documentary talk about him, the people who started with him in Boston, especially, Jake, every sentence they say pretty much amounts to like, wow, that room had never seen a black guy. You know, so there was like this like exoticism and fascination with him because Boston didn't include black voices in most of their venues. And when they did, you know, it was one black person a night probably. And I'm sorry, but probably stereotypical type of black comedy, right? Or black comics that would fit into a white club. And so by the account of every comic here, you know, here comes Patrice, who basically is an original thinker, as Bonnie put it, right? Which is, again, here's what's crazy, right? The comics who would defend making Asian jokes today, I would guarantee you that the fucking Venn diagram of the comics who think Patrice is the most amazing person on earth is like a circle on those two, right?
Yeah.
And yet, the difference is these Asian joke-making douches now are fucking horrible, unoriginal hacks who are literally just regurgitating society's ideas about an ethnic group, right? And Patrice comes up and people take notice because he's speaking about his personal experience. He's like crossing boundaries from a point of knowledge and experience, you understand me? Not from, I just heard this is funny and I've heard people talk this way always. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they think that they're mirroring somebody like Patrice, who was by no means perfect, and we'll get into that, but they're an inverse. Does that make sense?
What yeah, I'm absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, I know this type of comic and I know what they'll tell you they're doing is, you know, they'll tell you Patrice is a philosopher and I'm also doing philosophy. And in order to do philosophy, you cannot restrict the words you say and the tools you use to get there. And that's what's wrong with everyone else is that they come to the wrong conclusions. They don't find the truth because they're afraid to use, you know, certain words and certain ideas and stuff like that. But what you have actually is a situation where 99% of the people surrounding one person are actually just doing like this thing you're talking. I think you hit the nail on the head where you're like, this is personal comedy, like just saying these slurs and stuff. And in the way where it just really makes your friends laugh. I mean, the moment you're sharing is the exact same thing over and over and over again. That's why it's bad creatively to me. It's the same joke, which is just you and me. We're, you know, whispering to each other outside of the, you know, outside the hearing of like someone else, this thing we're not supposed to be saying. And, you know, that is inherently like, that's like a power thing. I mean, all these like slurs and stuff like that come from keeping the power structure in order and keeping weaker people out of it, exactly. Calling someone, you know, a fucking homophobic slur or racial slur or whatever. And I'm sorry, this is where this gets complicated. That is funny to those people is the problem.
Yeah.
And that is an act of comedy. It's not creative, though. It's but like also that's, these people can yeah. argue like, well, I have entire audiences that enjoy doing this with me. And it's like, yeah, that I mean, on some level, sure, you're an entertainer on some level. You're not a fucking artist, I don't think. But like, you know, you are getting these people off in a certain way. You're kind of like a fucking sex worker, honestly, for like this really perverse, yeah, like racist part of the brain, because it's just the same fucking thing over and over again. But there is like an argument that they can make, which is just like, well, enough people like this and they want to hear it, therefore it's good. And like, I don't really think that there's a lot of ground that you can stand on as a comic going like, you know, no, like people don't like this. Like you have to kind of call it what it is, which is bad comedy. Like it's just yeah. like it's lame. It's there's a lot of people that like there's a demand for it. Like I don't think I do better in capitalism than bad comedians. Yeah. I think bad comedy does better. I just think I'm right and they're fucking wrong and mine is like better for the world. And what they're trying to say that's wrong is that their thing is better for the world. And in that, they're trying to compare themselves to Patrice because Patrice was actually getting at fucking truth, right?
Yeah.
And he wasn't doing it that way. But, I mean...
Well, but so let's look at some of Patrice's feds, right? Some of his failings, right? Which, so, as a fucking educated leftist progressive woman, immigrant, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Patrice told me he loved me one time, so... Not everyone. But... He fucking did piss me off when he would talk about women sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Not in this way of like, oh my God, I fucking think he needs to lose his job or anything. But I heard a Patrice joke and didn't think it was funny before. It happens, right? And most of the time it's about women stuff, right? But a lot of times he fucking really made me laugh with some shit that was like crossing that line into misogyny, right?
Right.
And... I kind of always wondered, like, why was it? Because it's this thing of, like, the people making the Asian jokes, they're not speaking, like I said, from a point of knowledge or experience, right? Patrice, the fact that he could hit some of these, like, misogyny lines and find humor, even for women in there, always made me think, like, there has to be a point of knowledge or experience that he's hitting on in this, right? And I always assumed that it was the being raised by a single mom thing. And it's clear that that had some impact. But did you see that in the documentary that said that when Patrice was like young, he read...
My Body Ourselves? Or
but yeah, our Bodies Ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was his mom's book. And it's, you know, like a pretty technical guide of like women knowing their own bodies and what brings them pleasure and how to communicate that. And... to me, that was like, oh, that's where this knowledge came from, where he was speaking from a place of like a man who got insight into women's world. And then he was able to find things that were funny and contradictory about that, like having that point of view. You know, like one of my favorite things that he did was actually an Opie and Anthony segment, which we should talk about at the end, like later on. But it's a clip that went around a lot about Radiohead. Oh, no, not about Radiohead. That one's good, too, though. But the one about Fight Club.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Did you see that?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a great clip because it's like him being like, he's like explaining the plot of Fight Club to the host. And then he's like, I'll be honest with you. I feel like I was in the movie theater and I looked around and I was like, oh, shit. I don't think I'm supposed to see this. And he was like, because it was like an intimately about the white male psyche,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So he was like, he was able to find these great jokes then about white men because he like did some research into them. You know what I mean? He didn't always hit the mark. But it was like a constructive kind of work, right? Where he was exploring the world and trying to interrogate the different things around him through his particular point of view, which is not what these motherfuckers who love him now do, right?
Yeah.
It is for them to even like equate what they do with that makes me furious. But it's like comics encourage it because there was Robert Kelly had my least favorite quote of the documentary.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, where he said, great comics have instant opinions. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And what he was talking about was like being quick on your feet, right? Being good on a podcast and the table where you're hanging out with each other. You can fucking quickly have something to say of substance and that is funny. And partially that's true. But it's like, you know, this thing that goes around every once in a while about like, I think the last one I saw was about writers. If you're a writer, you shouldn't just be writing 12 hours a day. You also need to read and watch things and interact with people so that you have something to write about. You need to have a life. We say this about comics.
Yeah.
If all you do is grind, then what are you fucking making jokes about if you're not experiencing a life or having a job or doing the things normal people do? And I think that that is the problem with some of these older comics. They think, and some of these right-wing comics, they believe this thing Robert Kelly said, that is just about having a fast, quick opinion, not about having it be informed by anything, not about, you know, like, funny is, it can, it's better if it's informed. Like, it's better if it has nuance. It's better, it's more likely to go A to C if you have more knowledge than just A and B.
Yeah.
Right? So, it just, I'm very bothered because there's a documentary full of contradictions in which they were very much saying like this person was an original while simultaneously being like, but no people like him were allowed into the spaces where he came up. So of course he's the original, you know? Like,
yeah.
And then later all these people who don't look like him or live a life like him or even do their art like him want to claim the right to transgress in the ways that he did without doing any of the work, without doing any of the lived experience, without even acknowledging it, Jake, without even acting like it's real. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're right to point out that Robert Kelly quote, because like what that person is, or what Robert Kelly's describing when he says instant opinions is like a rhetorical nature. Like when people debate each other, debate is like masquerades as political, but it's actually just rhetorical. Like it's just playing a game of Mortal Kombat, essentially, with like, you know, sentences and ideas and presenting things or whatever. Like you can train yourself to do that. Ted Cruz is a really good example of somebody who is, if we all can see, he's a fucking idiot. And he has a history of being very good in debate because it's literally just a class you can take where you go, oh, I'm going to frame things this way or that way or whatever. And I think
it's also why bros want to debate you. They never want to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, because they sit there and listen to the radio and they're like, well, if you win in a thing like this, you get the clout without ever actually having to be right about what you're talking about or like, you know, kind of have a point or whatever. And I think that's definitely what's going on a lot of this right-wing comedy stuff, because like you can see it. I mean, when you follow these people, it's not even, they're not even that good at that. Like they use the same fucking points over and over again and they constantly contradict each other. Like I fucking remember when coronavirus first happened and like shows were getting canceled, some fucking comic, one of these dickheads was like, well, you're really gonna cancel our show when cholesterol kills more people every year than this virus. And I was reading this and I was like, this is you're doing Bill Hicks? That's a 20-year-old bit. It's a bit about fucking cigarettes, you idiot. But it's like transparent, right? But with Patrice, yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, it was really frustrating to watch this documentary and watch all these dickheads. Although I will say this, they pointed this out in the documentary. Like a few people would break every once in a while and go, all these people are lying and saying that they respected him when in his life.
Donnell fucking Rawlings, big ups to you. For
breaking. Yeah. He was great. And I think that's probably pretty important to point out because, you know, what really kind of I got out of watching this is that he was an iconoclast for sure. And like, all of these people disagreed with him all the time. And what was and especially like, I think infuriating to the people around him or the, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, didn't compute with them. It isn't the way they think is that he, without hesitation, clearly would stick to like his integrity to the point of turning down jobs and stuff. And
that's what I wanted to get to. Yeah.
Yeah. And so honestly, like when I was watching this, it made me think about my own career and it made me feel a little bit better about myself, even though it's a story about somebody who dies and,
it does not end well for those of you who do not want to play the game, Jake.
Well, but he got diabetes, you know?
Yeah, I know. But
he died, like, I think artistically fulfilled on some level. Like, I mean, clearly he probably wanted to be around longer to do more of it, but I mean, the guy clearly could not stomach playing the fucking game to get along, and clearly didn't care.
I'm glad he got to do the last special, because it seems like that was definitely a big achievement for him, and it got, you know, like something he got to do on his own terms and in the voice he wanted to do and all of that. But I kind of felt like there was a sadness to him at the end, even of like the stress of, I think there was even a part where he talked about it in this documentary where he said, you know, like, having to like not watch yourself not succeed or lose opportunities because you're not willing to play along with this game. You know, I think this is the part where I wanted to bring up Opie and Anthony, because Dennis Leary was the one that said at some point, he was like, he was watching Patrice. So like, this was after, so Patrice, oh, okay, this is what it was. So a bunch of comics, everybody, Burr, it's like, we all think he's amazing. Everybody thinks he's wonderful. We're trying to get him stuff. People want to work with him. So he starts getting acting gigs on movies, on The Office, lots of stuff. And then he basically, nobody likes being around him on set. They implied that, I guess, he doesn't think Steve Carell is funny. So he like got pissed that Steve Carell was telling him what to do, because he was like, you know, you're not fucking funny. You don't get to tell me how to be a like comedic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he was like shitty and unlikable and had a bad attitude. And so then little by little, people stopped wanting to work with him and didn't want to do stuff. And so then there's like a period where he's not getting stuff because people don't like him. And then he starts getting on Opie and Anthony. And he even talks about in the thing about like how for him it was like the return of that feeling of the table and like being around comics where he could be himself and he could just like make jokes about whatever, and people were laughing and people were appreciating it, and people weren't saying, oh, what an asshole, and they weren't being like, Patrice is difficult to work with, you know what I mean? And so he started going on Opie and Anthony more often, and Dennis Leary says at this point something like, you know, then I got sad or I got worried because I didn't want him to just be some sidekick, you know, to basically be like the black guy on this fucking radio, like morning radio show or whatever. But Patrice felt like it was like a return or an opportunity, you know what I mean? And it did get him more fans and it did get him approval for all these kinds of things. And I would say to you that a vast majority of Patrice's current fans, the ones that I don't like, came from Opie and Anthony years, right?
Yeah.
And it's what makes me really think that like if he had lived, he would not be on the right side of history in a lot of ways, because the audience that would have, quote, rescued him, the audience that would have come to him with approval, would have been this alt-right leaning audience.
That makes a lot of sense, because when I was watching this, like, I know I was saying, like, oh, this reminds me of the way I operate or whatever, but also, but it's kind of not, because, like, I think that he did not have that coherent of an understanding of capitalism, which is weird.
No.
You know what's kind of funny? I didn't know about him. He's named after Patrice Lumumba, the like socialist leader of the fucking People's Republic of the Congo.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he's just this guy that we're talking about. He's a comedian. He's not like somebody with like a fucking, you know, a scientific understanding of like the thing he's dealing with, but he is somebody who fleshes it out and has an intuitive understanding of it. But you know what I wouldn't do? I wouldn't be a dick on a movie set. I would just either do the movie or not do it, you know?
Exactly.
And I think that, yeah, he was kind of like splitting the difference in a lot of those situations he was in. And yeah, he also fucking wasn't perfect. Like, I don't want to be one of these people that's like, Patrice would have agreed with me. Like, all these fucking people are doing this documentary and stuff. So I'm not going to tell you, I think he would be cool if he was still alive. I think you're probably right. It's an accurate prediction. He probably would have pandered to a lot of these horrible people. Most comics on that side of things did. But I do also feel compelled to point out that, you know, if he stuck to what was great about him,
he would have been contrarian to his own fan base.
Exactly. Right? And that's what these people are identifying. His fans, his O&A type fans are saying, well, he challenges people.
Yeah.
Therefore, like, he must agree with me. But I think
he would have challenged you.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. He would have challenged you. And it's like, when these people are pissed off at me, when they project onto me, like, oh, you're like, you know, you're like, they always tell me like, oh, I'm pandering to get ahead. And it's like, to who? Yeah. Who is buying shit from me? I'm a fucking loser, you know? But like, I am challenging these people. Yeah. And it's so weird. It's like a fucking mental trick to look at something and not realize like the thing that you were pretending to like being challenging and not being brainwashed and not, you know, having a superficial reason for doing what you're doing and not having that reason be capitalism or whatever. Like, the people you hate the most are doing that.
Yeah.
But you actually, so it's like, reduce the fraction. You actually just don't like what they're saying and you're just like blaming it on that or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like how they always say, like, they would, I'm sorry, somebody came up today. Fucking one of these comics on Twitter was saying, you know, who are the comics that are, he's like, let's make a list of all the comics that are doing this, that are like, quote unquote, you know, canceling comedians to get ahead or whatever. And I just fucking hilarious. I made a long list of them or whatever. Of course I was in it. Seth Simons is in it. He's not a comedian, you know. But then at the end of it, somebody was saying, like, you know, what do you think Lenny Bruce would have thought of these fucking cowards? And it's like, you know, we can never, you can't say, because the guy died. So he's frozen in time as what he was. But I think if you have an understanding of what Lenny Bruce was, I don't think he would have liked these people. Like, I think he would have challenged them at the very least. Yeah. In fact, you know, when a comic gets old enough to where they are complacent within that crowd, I don't fucking like them anymore. I don't think that they're over. Like, Dave Chappelle right now fucking sucks. He's boring. He was a person in when he was younger that would have probably grappled with some of these ideas. And now he's just rationalizing, and rationalizing fucking sucks.
Yeah, totally. It was an interesting documentary. I do recommend it to people, especially if when thinking about these things about like what is a transgressive comic and all of that stuff and where does it get you, especially in the sense of Patrice being transgressive in his career, like actually behind the scenes. And I mean, I don't know if it's an end, but I just thought it was really great to hear in his voice some of these things where he said, that if you're phony, it takes something out of you. But being honest isn't always a great thing. People don't want to hear it. And I thought that like really summarized probably the duality of Patrice and the duality of why people are attracted and repelled by him and want to be like him while not understanding him at all. Because he was simultaneously this person who was so actually committed to the truth in a way that all these so-called truth tellers are not. But at the same time, he was like sad and struggling with the fact that people don't actually want to hear the truth. And saying the truth often means not succeeding or being ostracized or not being wanted around. Right?
Yeah.
And I don't, it's hard for me to understand how people can see the same story and not pick up on any of this nuance and just see it as, if Patrice can say it, why can't I? What? How did you get that from all of that? You know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's it. We could end it on this Colin Quinn quote from the documentary where he said, not everyone can do it or should do it. That was a good one.
Yeah.
anything else? What else did you, anything you liked or want to end it on for that one?
The funniest part of this documentary to me was the video footage of like the, I guess, late 90s into the aughts or whatever. So they would, the camera would be like in front of the cellar and you would see Jim Norton and Patrice and all these cellar guys hanging out wearing like their 90s black leather jackets because they're frozen in time from when they got like famous or whatever. And then Rich Voss would walk up and he'd be wearing a giant baby blue Kangol hat backwards that he clearly does not wear anymore because it did not work. He would be like, well, he says a really bad joke at one point. He went, what is this, a zero convention?
Yeah.
And start making fun of him. It was such a bad dad joke. That was it. That was my favorite part of the documentary.
I generally really liked the whole like comics hanging out thing. I thought it was lovely. You know, I thought the even like Tough Crowd, which I loved very much growing up and shit, was like I guess I was like a teenager. I don't know, maybe young. I don't know when that came.
Yeah, I watched Tough Crowd also. I loved Tough Crowd.
I loved it. Yeah, I loved it. And I just can't help but like see how when they're talking about how much they love their boys club, they're so blinded to how they keep people out and how they're like, the people who are in it with them are so like them. They're just like surrounded by the same kinds of people.
Well, let me tell you something about that, right?
Yeah.
I loved Tough Crowd when I was a kid, like before I started doing stand up.
Yeah.
And then I started doing stand up and then I started acting like Tough Crowd and everybody fucking hates me for it. And I always go like, but you guys loved it. You love when comedians fight. Everyone says this was their favorite show. How are we living in this insane contradiction all the fucking time, right? But something occurred to me while I was watching this documentary, which is like, this isn't really a good point because like, I know why it's the people that are in the documentary. It's because they're Patrice's friends. But it's just like, when I was watching this, I was like, God damn, you know, every month or so we watch a documentary or a thing for like this podcast. And I'm just like, how many times do I have to listen to the same 12 guys talk about the entire art form of comedy? This is fucking boring. And I think that what that kind of illustrates is like, you know what? Stand up was what it was 20 years ago, 10 years ago when these people were like the, you know, the center of it.
They did everything. Yeah.
But by nature of it being like a philosophical endeavor, it now looks stupid that we're asking Rich Voss, like, how explain to me what's going on in comedy right now? Because comedy is now democratized. A ton of people are allowed to do it. So we should be listening to a ton of people when we talk about comedy, and we're still worshiping like 12 fucking boomers. It doesn't make any fucking sense, you know? Comedy is temporal. It's socially critical. It's about what's happening in society. And so you literally can't stick to a bunch of dinosaurs who all got rich a long time ago. Because when you get rich, you're frozen in fucking time and you look like dressed like a guy from the 90s and your opinions are that of a guy from the 90s. And only Eddie Pepitone really even comes close to like not doing that. But even that, we don't even need Eddie Pepitone because there's still younger people with like an actual young point of view and shit like that.
No, and there's old ones that are changing too and everything, but there's like the inherent contradiction. What I would say is that a lot of the older ones that are still kicking ass and learning shit and coming up with new jokes and new points of view are not super famous, one of the top 15 that all the douchebags like. And that does make all the difference, because the real problem of comedy fandom or whatever is the inherent contradiction of idolizing an idol breaker, right? If you idolize someone because they break idols, but then through idolizing them, you freeze them in time on a platform, on a pedestal, and they cannot continue to be idol breakers, then you've undone what was special about them to begin with, right? And I think that's what is happening to like Patrice's legacy. It's becoming a legacy of not an idol breaker, but of idol worshipers.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't think he would have liked that. And whatever, you know, not going to speak for him. But the only reason that I would really be like, damn, I wish he was alive, is really to see, because now I think you're correct. You know, I was really thinking like, damn, I think we would have lost him. But I think you're right that he would have retained his contrarianness towards his own audience and towards those people who tried to make him into an idol.
I mean, I don't know, but it just seems like it was in his DNA. And like when you,
if you met him, if you even told him that, oh, I think you're so funny, he like, his immediate response was just like, oh, really? Do you?
Yeah, I know.
Like, mocked you for being a fan. It was fucking pretty good, you know. Like, I know that it's probably also from like insecurities, other things, but like,
no, I mean, when I watched,
I don't think he wanted to be an idol. It was not the point.
When I watched the documentary, I think it really got a good picture of like, you know, somebody described him as a philosopher and was like, he would just start talking about something and start picking apart, and then he would go on stage and do it. But the way he would like kind of get like upset while he was doing it and like furrow his brow a little bit and then talk his way through it, to me, like, that looks like someone who is thinking their way through something, like while they're driving around, you know, at work or something like that. And they're like, I can't stop thinking about this fucking thing. The way you have like an argument in your head with someone the day after you had the actual argument and stuff. That's why, to me, I'm like, this is not a bit. This is not manufactured. He didn't come up with this in a lab. This guy was one of the few people that does the thing that people talk about, where it's like, he literally went on stage and just started thinking, you know, into the microphone or whatever. And that's why, yeah, I think if I was a betting man, I don't know, I'd say probably would still be like that, because some people, to their own detriment, can't not be like that. And I feel
Ahem.
That.
Ahem. It's pretty funny because it is actually pretty funny to me that there's like a whole contingent of internet boys who hate Jake Flores and love Patrice O'Neal. And then I'm like, oh, that's pretty funny. Like, I know obviously like your comedic style and content is not the same, but your approach to your art is pretty similar.
Yeah, I'm going to get a fedora.
Approach to your peers and all of this shit. It's just weird because I think, yeah, I don't know. It's also partially a product of the insulation of like the fact that there were just like the top, the 10 people who are on everything for 10 years or 20 years, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just a complete contradiction. It's like Freudian or psychological or something. Like, you know, you take a look at a comedian who disagreed with everything everyone said around him all the time, and you go, that guy would have agreed with me. Like, what do you mean? He wouldn't have agreed with you at all. He doesn't need to fucking agree with anyone. That's the whole point. The reason you're saying you like him is because...
because he never agreed with any of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, well, you know, pouring one out for Patrice, wherever you are, buddy. I don't believe in heaven, but I believe in your spirit and stuff, you know, in a kind of like not literal way.
Yeah, sure.
And anything else you want to say about this? Or are we ending this bitch?
Happy St. Patrice's Day.
Happy St. Patrice's Day. I think that's the title.
Yeah, this is perfect.
Yeah. Or should we go with the full, like, St. Patrice chases snakes out of...
He chased the Puerto Rican rattlesnake out of Ireland.
No. yeah. So anyway, sign up for our Patreon. We're totally making content at a much more regular pace now. Also, if you want to send us an email, write us your thoughts, questions, disagreements at whyyoumadpod@gmail.com. You know all our info to follow us and check out PDA. Pod Damn America, our sister/mother podcast. What's up, dude? Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
All right.
It's a good way to end it.
Yeah, and everybody, if you want to sign up for a Patreon before I delete last week's drunk episode, you should probably do that, because I should delete it. I have embarrassed myself terribly.
Yeah, we can't keep that on the internet. But it was...
Yeah, right? We're going to take it down. It's just too revealing. I talk about crushes, all sorts of things. We don't need that out on the internet. Thanks for everybody who tried to wingman it. Please stop. okay. Bye.
All right, bye.